At the City of Edgewater, I'm in charge of planning, building, economic development. Tonight we're going to be discussing First Business Park. This is a commercial piece of property that came into the city on a rezoning back in 2024. So to give just kind of a basic timeline, so the developer first submitted in June 21st of 2024. The yellow highlights here are all the public hearings that the applicant had to go through prior to where we are at today. And so city staff had sent the applicant through the TRC process, and then once all comments were satisfied, we sent them out public notice and planning and zoning for the entitlements. The rezoning, which allowed for this type of development, was done in August 14th of 2024. Because it's an ordinance, it requires two readings before the city council, and that occurred on September 9th of 2024 and then December 2nd of 2024, where the entitlements were then approved. The applicant then submitted for the major site plan, which is the next step in the process, and he did that on December 12th of 2024. City staff ended up sending out public notice on June 25th for the planning and zoning meeting, and then subsequently had city council on August 4th, 2025 that approved the major site plan for the development. So within Florida statutes, it might be a little hard to see. So one and two here is what the notice requirements are in Florida statutes. So when it's less than 10 contiguous acres, then you'll notify all the surrounding property owners. And then when it's over it, you also have to do several publishments. So the city does both in all cases. We do both. We send adjacent. We also send within 500 feet. And then we also publish within the newspaper. So city staff sent the first public notice for planning and zoning. If you go to the next, there we go. It's hard to see. At the very bottom is Majestic Oaks Phase 1 and 2. So city staff pull the public notice from the property appraiser's website. And so whatever information is on there is who those letters go to, because that's where your tax bill is going. So we did send it to Majestic Oaks Phase 1 and 2. With what was on file with the property appraiser. City staff then published for the rezoning in the Daytona Beach News Journal as required by statute. Subsequently, once council had approved the rezoning, which approved a business planned unit development agreement, which is a specialized agreement just for that property, city staff, after subsequent reviews with the applicant, took the item, the major site plan, to planning and zoning for review, and then to city council. So this is the planning and zoning public notice that was sent for the July planning and zoning meeting. Again, city staff sent this out. Those are all the people that were included, as well as Majestic Oaks Phase 1 and 2. So the development agreement of Majestic Oaks is what staff originally looked at when we first planned this development and we were reviewing it. So the development agreement for Majestic Oaks lays out basically the same kind of framework for the agreement that we signed with the applicant. It's a special agreement for your specific property that outlines all the rules. So in this case, the road shall be public. And that you can see that in the dedication within the recorded Majestic Oaks book and page. One of the other things, too, is that in this agreement, there is a stipulation agreement from a court case that roads within your guys' development could never connect to Silver Ridge. And that'll come into play later when staff were looking for alternatives. So the Majestic Oaks Phase 1, so there were a lot of questions about how can they connect to this road? This is our road. So Majestic Oaks in Phase 1, in the general notes, so that's on the, go back just for a moment. So when we look at plats, the left-hand side here is what is called our general notes, and those are just stuff from the surveyor that lays out kind of basic parameters. Then there's also on the right-hand side the dedication page. That is the legal framework for what is being dedicated. When we say dedicated, transferred over to the city for ownership. So in the general notes, there's note 17 of the plat for your guys' subdivision says that the landscaping and signage islands and berms within Tract E shall be maintained by the Homeowners Association. Within the dedication, it noted that the road, Tract E, given to the city for maintenance. You can see here, Track D is how your subdivision accessed US 1. And then concurrently, there was later on Majestic Oaks Phase 2. And so in Majestic Oaks Phase 2, this was another PUD, which is a Planned Unit Development Agreement. And in this one, again, the development agreement called for public roads. So the roads within Majestic Oaks, Phase 1 and 2, are all public. So where we are today. So when the concept plan first came in, this is the conceptual plan. This is what they are supposed to match as best as they can. And this is, gives staff an idea of the general layout of the site with the parameters that we established during that agreement. You can see here on the left is the concept plan. I apologize that it's so thin in color. On the right-hand side is the approved site plan. So really the only difference between the two site plans is that there's a reduction in units, 4 units, and that that far right-hand turn was removed. Now, why was that removed? So when staff send out a major site plan, city staff send it to the following people. We send it to Volusia County, goes to Volusia County traffic, goes to FDOT traffic, it goes to our traffic consultants that the city pays for, Stanley Engineers. And so we receive comments. This was one of the first comments that we received back when we first sent this out. This was February 7th, 2025. Tammy was my admin at the time. Michael Sanders, the head engineer in District 5, says that we'd prefer access wholly served from Oak Branch. Another possible consideration could be for that driveway to be designed as right-in only. Subsequently, through different conversations, DOT makes the applicant move that driveway. You can see here, and this is late in July, that from Chappelle David at FDOT, that they had made the applicant move the driveway. Part of that is due to FDOT standards. So in the rural condition, which they consider US 1 in this way, in this area, and that's based on the type of drainage that it has, open swales versus piped, those kind of parameters. So in this case, in this rural condition, we're at 55 miles per hour, turn lane distances are supposed to be 350 feet. So right now you guys do have a turn lane that provides 350 feet. So you can see here, that's that turn lane, basically 350 feet to Majestic Oaks there. And then next slide, you can see on the next one here that it would be less, 284 feet. And there'd be difficulties with access, going into Silver Circle. If that was to extend. So DOT, due to traffic concerns, did not want that. In addition, during this time that this was under review, the applicant across the street from you came in for a pre-app, and they're looking to do a large commercial project on those 14 and a half acres. With that understanding, DOT wants to generate traffic at Oak Branch, likely for a traffic light when that big box commercial, whatever goes across the street, comes in. And that is why they didn't want to allow a right-hand turn right before a traffic light. The other thing, going back to the PUD agreement, staff had looked at trying to run a road through private property from Silver Circle. Part of the problem is, in your PUD agreement, it does not allow any connectivity to Silver Circle. So by having access come through there, you would still have them coming through Oak Branch. So that's the problem, is that even with doing a right-hand turn, even if DOT had allowed the lesser 285-foot right-hand turn, or if we had gone with the Silver Circle connection, DOT would have had that out on Oak Branch. And so with that, city staff did not go that route with DOT, and DOT really was not supportive of that idea. So just kind of looking at the general picture, so there was concerns about pass-through traffic through the neighborhood, which I can understand. There's already a fair amount of neighborhood business off of Hibiscus and Guava. And then I think it's important to note, too, that the parcel just to the south of this one is for sale right now. And it is zoned B3 highway commercial, and it does have a commercial future land use. So by right, someone can do highway commercial on that piece of property. So just understanding kind of the framework and the future build-out of this area is that this has already been zoned for commercial to the south and across the street. And that is why DOT wanted the access only on Oak Branch in the future. So just going into the actual site plan itself, so this is just looking at the typical grading in the pipes here of the two buildings with the units inside. So the first four units on the front are the general retail, and then the back units are contractor flex space. So it allows for inside warehousing, plumbing, that sort of kind of. The intent of this was to allow small businesses the opportunity to have a small enough space where they could start their business, run it out of here, and really have a pretty inexpensive building footprint where they can have storage and kind of move in and out. Because one of the things that a lot of businesses don't have is that kind of warehousing component. And so oftentimes they, like an AC person, they have to constantly go back to the main headquarters. When they have these little depots, they can use those to get the AC units and so forth. So that was kind of the intent behind this PUD, was really to encourage small businesses, limit retail, because we didn't want to trip too many traffic counts. And that was really important. That's why staff limited parking. Staff has the right to control the uses that are approved with it based on the number of parking spaces available. So if one unit takes up all 90 parking spaces, he can't rent a single unit, any other unit. So that's in the PUD agreement that was added protection added by staff for that concern. Next slide. So this is looking at the full site plan. Existing on site, there's about 7 trees currently. The applicant is going to remove those 7 trees, and they're going to plant roughly 100 trees on site. It's 98 trees and 2 palms. The back landscape buffer, I believe, has roughly 60-something trees. And that was done purposely to provide that buffer with your community. In addition, the land development code requires developers, when they connect, to extend sidewalks. And so that's why that sidewalk was extended from Majestic Oaks up Oak Branch to US 1. That's a requirement of the land development code. So the big issue here is the trees that were originally going to be proposed to be removed. So at the outset, staff was going to have the applicant remove all the trees, and staff knew that when he had to pull out the trees, he would have to replace the water line. We have worked with the applicant for him to only remove one tree for his entrance. We are not removing any other oaks in Oak Branch but that one tree. There is some concern about the water line in the future that we may have to come in. But for now, this is, I think, a pretty good solution to the tree issue within the landscape buffer of the entrance. And this is kind of, I wish I had gotten them to put it in color for us. They're gray and brown earth tones. But these are what kind of the front of the buildings will look like in Majestic Oaks. And then lastly, this is my last one. So what staff has done is that we've extended public notice to 500 feet. So when I came to the city in October of 23, we were just doing what statute required, which is that dark red, which is, you can see that's just the adjacent properties. City staff have increased it to 500 feet, and we have proposed several other buffers that we could eventually add to the land development code. Once SB 180 is over, we could make these changes. But this is just, I want to give you a visual representation of where city staff actually sent that, because I know that list. No one can actually read any of the names on that list. That's up on the PowerPoint right now. But at least you can see from this, this is what city staff had sent out for public notice those five times. I will gladly answer any questions. I know Linda wanted to do her presentation. Do you want to do that first, or? Okay. Okay.
So my understanding is that you're removing just one tree. Right. Right, I see. Yeah.
Landscape buffer, and then you can see there where the curb cut is, the apron.
Right.
You can see the one tree.
Right. Right. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Okay. Interesting. This morning I had a delivery from Lowe's very early this morning. And it was raining, and I had a new range, and they were delivering that. And a two very nice young man drove this full-size tractor trailer in. And as they were putting the stove in, I asked him, I said, did you have trouble finding the entrance? He said, oh, no, that wasn't it. He says, the tricky part was trying to get it through the entrance coming in. So, and it is a problem, and it's always been a problem. You know, and these were two young drivers that were handling that, you know. And I think that's the real problem with this is that I don't care if a tree comes down. That's no big deal. You can grow a tree. No, but the problem is that I think at that point, people coming in and out of that entrance, and we have a lot of cars now and trucks coming in and out of there. Some don't drive too slowly either, you know, and someone pulling out. I think it's just ludicrous to think that eventually there isn't going to be a problem there sometimes with an accident on that. I mean, I'm not sure what the solution is at this point, but I just think it's a bad place to put the entrance, really, to be honest with you on that.
I'll sit just because I'm whatever. Just a couple kind of broad questions, because as we'd gone through some of the slides, I guess it was the FDOT report where it showed like the 250 feet that was available, roughly, whatever that was. I think it was maybe the next slide. Yeah. So that one appears to be like fed from the north side rather than center fed. I don't know if that gets it across the line. And I also don't know if this is, you know, above your pay grade too, because just seeing this as it comes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this may be even that much farther, just because I'm not sure where it picks up a little bit north from 45 up to 55, and with all the construction going on here, and you say possibly at the lot south and the shopping center, the public shopping center below that, is that street, is US 1 going to remain 55 in that area for the long term? If it goes to 45, does that resolve a whole bunch of these problems?
I can't say. So it's kind of ironic. So typically DOT will drop the speed when there's a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. I know that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But there is some balancing act to it. So there could be in the future with a lot of traffic that kind of slow down. Maybe because there are several new lights that get placed on US 1 that don't warrant racing at 55 to each light, right? So I think as the transportation network evolves in Edgewater and really kind of matures with kind of street lights at, for example, the Lennar subdivision, I know, that one is going to trip a traffic light at Falco Road. And that's probably going to get tripped within the next 2 years here. We'll have another traffic light at Jones Fish Camp, probably within the next 3 to 5 years. These traffic lights will start to change some of the dynamics. So certainly in the future, it could be a possibility, but I think because this development is here now in the current condition, that's why DOT has recommended this.
Right. And I just bring it up because, yeah, if the speed does drop and this issue would have been resolved if it happened 2 years later and it just ended up pissing off a whole neighborhood over something that would be resolved anyway, it just seems worth calling out. So,
yeah, and city staff, I have been very diligent. I've left 3 voicemails with Michael Sanders at FDOT. I've left him 2 emails, and I've called the liaison for District 5. They are not returning my calls. So probably because they didn't want to come here. But, you know, so city staff are trying to work with FDOT. It is their use permit. So anyone who accesses their property and needs a driveway permit to access their property onto US 1 has to go through FDOT's permitting process. That's completely outside of my scope. I don't even see those comments. The only way I was able to get that comment was from the developer who provided it from FDOT. So that scope is really removed from the city's purview because it's not our road.
Thank you.
Actually, I have 2 questions right now with probably more to come before we leave. First and foremost, at the end of this project, will my property values go up or down?
I think they will go up.
But there's no way to project whether they're going to go up or down. So we're going to have to we're the ones taking the risk, not you guys. We're the ones taking the risk. And we don't have a dime in the whole thing. So, that's one of my main concerns. The second concern I have is once this is completed, will it help flooding in our area or decrease flooding in our area?
It should not contribute any flooding. So this project is being designed to the 100-year storm. So what that means is they're required to do, because that's an impacted canal, it's 90% of pre. So let me take a step back because this is kind of a larger topic. So stormwater at the city, there's storm events. So there's the rainfall intensity, and that's measured over a duration. And they measure those, they call them the 25-year, the 100-year, 500, 1,000. Really all that is just the amount of rain that's falling across that time period. City staff in the Land Development Code, prior to cutoff on SB 180, codified into the code 100-year close or 100-year open basin stormwater. So what that means, in pre and post, they have to be 90% of the water that was, only 90% of the water can leave the site. In addition to that, there's higher water quality standards that make them hold more water. So essentially, they're required to hold that 13.1 inches over that site, and then they have exfiltration in their site that perks down, and then in really high events, that pond on the very east side is where their exfiltration feeds into.
You can see in the parking lot there are exfiltration grates, and those run underneath there, and there are pipes that run all underneath it, almost like a giant septic tank. A septic field is underneath this site, and so when that water goes into the site, it's kind of like a dry pond, the swales you see everywhere in the city. Instead, though, they're in exfiltration pipes. Then in high storm events, they discharge into the wet pond. There's 2 reasons why in all new developments you see both dry and wet ponds. And that is because the city has to do with chemistry. So nitrogen comes out of the water through plants, typically in soil. And so we have dry ponds that allow them to stage down. And that allows the water to go into the water table and perk and provide water quality for nitrogen. The wet ponds, when water flows in there, phosphorus typically settles out within 72 hours. And so the ponds have to recover within 72 hours. And so the phosphorus falls out of the water. And then in the event that there's any discharge, the water is cleaner than what would typically be discharged. And that's why you see the dry and wet swales and ponds. So to your answer, sir, this site will hold more water than it is in pre-development. So I don't see how it could cause more runoff on you, because the models have shown, based on the three engineers who have reviewed this plan set, that it will hold more water.
What happens if it...
Excuse me, dear. Where is the wet pond you're talking about?
The wet pond is in the, right in the far east side of the, I guess, on the north of the site.
Is it next to the mailboxes? Because I know that this particular piece of property is a bowl. And they're going to be building on that, raising it, of course, correct, to allow for that construction. And
correct. So let me. So one of the things about fill at the city is part of the reason why they bring in fill is, one, to get the site level, right? The site completely grades down. So you really only have two options. You either bring up the site level and balance the site, or you have to build on stem walls or whatever it may be. And then there's retaining walls, and so it would have to be stepped down. In this case, they bring up the site to 15 to match US 1, and then they slope it down. However, on the backside of this, there's whole site is F-type curb. So it's not like what you see in your neighborhood. It's not the Miami curb. This is the solid. And so all the water that's in the site gets captured internally. And so the only water that could possibly run off the site is in that 20-foot rear landscape buffer with those 67 trees and 200-something shrubs that are back there. And so that would be the only possible runoff over a 15-foot stretch that would possibly come off that site.
One last question. If it does flood, who do we sue, the city or the developer?
I would speak to an attorney.
Okay.
I don't care for the idea. I would like to know, how many trees did you say they were going to go around the perimeter?
So on the...
I know they're going to only take one from us, but you mentioned they were going to add trees around.
Yeah, so part of this development agreement that staff wrote, we've enhanced the landscape buffers at the city, and that was specifically done to make them very, very dense, to match kind of what I stole it from Mount Dora, because I don't like to reinvent the wheel.
They're going to be so close together, it's going to be like a hedge, so you won't be able to see the parking or...
No, so in addition, one of the things that staff had added on the... I wish I had a... On the back of the parking lot, there is a 6-foot vinyl fence that is being placed at the very back on the F-type curb. So we're up here. We have our building parking right. Here's that drive aisle at the rear. Curb, fence. Then we drop down 5 feet. And in that 5 feet over that 15-foot stretch, or that 5 feet of elevation over that 15-foot stretch, there are... The Chaz, can you see what it says on that north property boundary?
I could just count the circles if they're representing a tree.
So on the north landscape buffer, he has been required to provide me with 371 shrubs, 24 inches in height at the time of planting. He owes me 54 trees on that back landscape.
How many? I'm sorry?
54. And those are both understory and canopy.
Okay. Were you joking about there being 90 parking spaces?
No, the original plan had 93. I think when we, with the reduction in the four units, it's back down to 60 something.
Okay.
Let's see.
I notice you had, you know, it's called First Business Park. So across the street, across the highway would be Second Business Park or Third Business Park?
No, that was what the applicant had named it.
Okay. I was just wondering how many parks are coming. Okay. Thank you.
I'm concerned about making a left-hand turn when you have the driveway coming out on Oak Branch Drive. That's bringing all the traffic from that shopping center out that way, going up to the light, to the exit. There's no light there. It's extremely hard a lot of times of the day to get across. How are we going to get across? You're going to put a light in?
No, staff would make the developer across the street put in the light.
Okay.
When someone builds it.
Because making a left-hand turn is almost impossible sometimes during the day.
Sure, I understand.
And you can't even get out into the center lane because you have the traffic going the other way. And cars sit there next to each other to make a left. So maximum of two cars could be there. And I can see everybody shopping there and coming out and going that way. Going that way is not, to the right is not bad, but going to the left, that's going to be dangerous.
I didn't print it.
I think you made a comment earlier when you were talking about the traffic flow that the speed limit is 55 miles an hour. Okay, that's wishful thinking. When you're trying to pull out of our subdivision and go left, go north on US 1, I mean, these people are on you before you can. I don't know. It just blink. Yeah, it's just they're flying down there. I wish the state, and I know this is not part of our conversation today, but I wish the state would lower the speed limit because they're going to do 10 miles an hour faster than the posted speed limit anyway.
Yeah, one of the challenging parts is a lot of your subdivision is actually kind of fortunate in that way that it is open and they are public roads. A lot of the subdivisions in the city are private roads, a fair amount are, especially the newer ones. And so what ends up happening, especially when they have access on US 1, there's not enough trips at that one intersection. Even though these subdivisions are quite large and they do generate quite a bit of traffic, even yours generates quite a bit of traffic, the trip counts for the DOT, there's thresholds. And if you're... So a trip is... So it's considered an average daily trip. So for single family, it's based on something called an ITE generation rate. Thank you, sir. And so for a single family, that's typically that manual is produced by Traffic Engineering Society, and it says per residential, you'll have 7 average daily trips coming out of a residential home. How does that work? Because you won't come back? I don't know. But that is what the math says. And so then they look at also AM and PM hours. And so they look at peak traffic hours. So typically it's looking at 8 AM and 5 AM. And seeing how those trips are. And so typically the city has a standard that we require a transportation impact study when you're above 1,000 daily trips or you're exceeding 100 AM or PM peak hour trips. This property didn't even get close to any of those trips. And so city staff, in accordance with following the TPO, which is the Transportation Planning Organization, which we've adopted their rules, most of the cities in Volusia County and Flagler County have adopted that body's rules for development. And so in this case, DOT, the county, our traffic consultant didn't think it was necessary to do a TIA for this site because it was well below the thresholds. Now, when TIAs are done, they look at way more things than just the basic transportation impact statement that was provided.
They look at intersections, future build out, that sort of thing. There really isn't a great way for the city to force themselves on TIAs because we've adopted the kind of the general framework for which everyone in the county agrees upon. And that is also how we get funding through FDOT, is by being part of that group. So bucking the system is probably not the best route to go. I think having better communication with DOT is certainly, staff has definitely had a hard time communicating with DOT on not just this project, but several projects. And so getting that communication, I think also what's really important, is the entitlements. So when a project comes in, the rezoning and the comp plan portion is the most important piece of any planning task. That is where the public has the most say. It's where the council has the most power, is during a land use hearing for a comp plan amendment. Now, so when we get to site plans or subdivisions, the analysis for which, or the rules by which we have to follow, is they've been established. The council established those rules in that PUD agreement, and that is what staff then enforce upon the developer. And so when we look at a major site plan or we look at a subdivision, city staff are going through the checklist. We're looking at your PUD agreement. We're looking at their PUD agreement. We're looking at the differences in the land development code. And it's really just a checklist. If they meet the boxes, then staff recommends approval. Now, on a rezoning, or in this case, a future land use change, where we're changing from residential commercial, agriculture to commercial, that is where the public and really the body has the most power to say, no, we don't want to see that change because that's a legislative decision, right? So a legislative decision here is we want to see this be commercial versus residential. That is something that they have, that legislative power, versus a quasi-judicial hearing, which is a lot of site plans and other things, are really just whether or not they have met the rules. And so, you know, I think it's really important on definitely to be involved. I know that Linda, you know, staff does apologize that it wasn't updated on the property appraisers. But we did try to send public notice, did post the property, and we did follow the steps that the process required. Yeah, what's... I agree, and until that development triggers that, it will be more difficult to get out of that entrance. I do not disagree with that statement. I think, though, the benefit of you is that if your subdivision is that you do have a lot of commercial around you, I know that's probably not something positive, but on the road aspect, as that commercial builds, it will eventually trigger a light there. So there is a positive, but, you know, it's based on future demand for it. Yes, ma'am. So the city, it's a public road. So the city can't say you can't drive on that public road. Now, in your Linda had sent me. So Linda did send me from your CCNRs, your covenants and restrictions, that it did have the ability to have a gate. Now, Edgewater Landings does have kind of that guard station. They have public roads, so you technically can't refuse anyone to come in, but you can have that type of guard station there if you wanted to do that. But it, you know, it's really you're just tracking who's coming in because you can't tell them they can't come in. because it's a public road. So that's kind of one of the challenging parts, especially like if you ever drive into Edgewater Landings, they'll chase you down in the golf cart if you drive past them. So not sure if that's something that you guys are interested in, but that is an opportunity that you could do that is in the CCNRs that you had provided. So, yes, sir.
I have another question. Coming in from US 1, also coming in on what I call the back end of it, like Glenwood, okay? There's a three-way stop sign. There's a sign on both of them that says limit 1 ton. There's no exceptions. That's pretty definitive. No more than 1 ton. These trucks, I guarantee you, are a lot more than 1 ton. And they're coming through because our streets are not that wide. I don't know if the last time you've been to Majestic Oaks, but if you got two cars parking on the street, you're not going to get an 18-wheeler going through there. They can't get there at all. So that's going to be part of the problem.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me just answer her question. And then. Okay. Yeah, that. Correct. Yeah, we had to shift the drive to protect the tree. That's why there's that jog now. It was city staff told the developer because of the concerns about the trees that only one tree could be removed, and so we had to adjust the driveway to make it work. We can go back to the green book.
On the green book, sure. At 450, so at 45, they don't even have a turn on a rural condition.
So it's 45, it would be a problem.
I can tell you the police department's proactively over the last 5 years tried to get the speed limit decreased at least 4 times, and they've been non-responsive.
I know.
I can tell you the police department over the past 5 years has approached them no less than 4 times, and they were non-responsive on 3, and replied to emails with their previous memorandum saying they had no issues.
Yeah, so, I think part of it, this is a rural condition. So, yeah, I think there would be a benefit on when if it was slowed down. Is the condition warranted? DOT doesn't think so. So, I know. It's just, it's not the city's road, so I can't just, I can't throw my weight, right? It's when I can throw my weight, trust me, I throw my weight. This is just one of those things where I just don't have that power to tell DOT what to do. Yeah, it would have to come in through Oak Branch. So in the DO, city staff have them have to clean the road every single day, silt fence, all those parameters. We've also put in the DO that during cone of uncertainty, no dewatering can occur on site. So anytime there would be a cone of uncertainty over anywhere, I believe I said the Wayward Islands, so pretty far out, like a week out, they would not be allowed to dewater, so they would just have to idle construction until a storm passed, at least 1 week in advance. So there are protections in place that staff have put for the public and the community here, given, you know, what we can control, right? I can control the dust. I can control the dirt and the debris from the construction entering Oak Branch.
Hi, everyone. Most of you may not know me because I'm not a neighbor. I work for the property management company. Michael, nice to meet all of you. Couple questions. One, the entrance, the driveway. Let's just say one of their trailers destroys the curb. Who's paying for that? Because we pay for the landscaping and all the signage there.
Yeah, so you pay for the landscaping maintenance, not for the right-of-way itself.
Correct. So they would be the one that pays for it?
That's
or the city?
Yeah. Okay. That's part of the right-of-way. Well, no. I mean, I'm not going to pay for it. So I'm not they can pay for it.
Yeah. Okay. The next thing is, I totally forgot. If I think about it, I'll say it.
That's okay.
Trust me. I've been working since 6 in the morning.
Linda, I'll let you come on up. And
you can't have two up. You can't have two up at the same time, can you? And his and mine.
Does it matter which one it is?
No. If the PDF shows, that's fine.
No, they both do. I just didn't know which one you got it
on. No, they're both the same. Okay. Well, all right. Okay, gathered you all here this evening for. I had a couple of questions along the way that as we were going through some. That's why I was asking if I could see any of the others. But just as a reminder, so we're a year out from this, and we did see right off the bat what those dates were, what the timeline was of the approvals and all the public notices and all the discussions around this project. But I want to remind everybody what was going on that time last year, where there was a whole lot of flooding. The use room was full of people that were in very high levels of distress about flooding. And right after that, the city manager got changed out. And then we had an interim city manager and then another interim city manager. And now another, maybe not to be too much longer, interim city manager, but there was a whole lot of changes going on, and a lot of this stuff did fall under the radar. And I am certainly aware of what the problems were with the notification. So, yes, the county, Volusia County Property Records, has the wrong address on their property record for the owner of this property. So those notifications never came to the HOA. So for those neighbors, like, there's only you, I think. So for the neighbors that were in that 500-foot, I think you got one too, right? I'm not sure. So for the neighbors that were within that 500-foot radius, they did receive information. I'm not sure about the very first one because this time last year, last summer, was when we were first making those changes to try and correct those address changes, and I'm not certain they had gone through at all. So there wasn't even at that point the management company address it there. So it was completely wrong this time last year. It's only partly wrong this time. But in any case, that notification did not come to the HOA. We absolutely did not get it. And for those neighbors who did get it, they were not particularly inclined to worry about it because they live in a neighborhood with an HOA. So, yeah, the card that, yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen the first letters. I just saw the postcard, and the most recent postcard in July. You're correct. Doesn't have Oak Branch on it. Doesn't say Majestic Oaks on it. It has that South Ridgewood address on it. There really was no connections being made there. We can't say that we didn't know that this property was going to be developed at some point, but it's been cleared for 10 years. So this snuck up on us. We had some problems. We had some errors. But I'm just here tonight to try and just say, let's not keep making them. My goodness. I'll go to the next slide. Here we are. So this is just a quick little rundown of the neighborhood, okay? It's telling you about how long we've been here. This is a business. The HOA is incorporated as a not-for-profit, and it is has got its business sign right out at the entrance. So we're not hiding from anybody. We're kind of easy to find. And I'm not afraid to come and talk about Majestic Oaks. So here I am doing my thing. Next one. This development agreement, you saw the color picture earlier. That was from the development agreement. And it shows that green area, all of the green on there, is the common area. Shown on the plat and then on the property records that it's designated as a residential common area. We have interest. We have ownership stake in that area. It's the common area for Majestic Oaks. In all of those documents, in the development agreement, in our CCRs, the access parcel is tract E, and that is all mentioned and put into all of those documents as being part of the HOA. I dare you to read that. Dare you to read that and tell me what it means. That is, that's just the description of going east, west, and whichever way. But it does describe that there's a residential parcel and an access parcel, and that was given over to the development when they started building homes in there. The organizing documents, again, should specify the roads. And then the city's section that says the reason that we have the weight limit on that little sign as you come in is because there are designated streets for truck use that the city has marked. And there's a list of them, and it does not include Oak Branch. Oak Branch is not listed as a truck route. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about the access gate. So in our CCRs, it says that, yes, we could have that access gate. So, and the next couple are more just some pictures to give you an idea of what has happened over the course of that, of the 20 plus years that we have been here, or you all have been here. I've only been here for 9. But that is an overhead view in 2006 of that area before it was cleared, followed by that after it was cleared. You can clearly see that all of that landscaping and that oak tree canopy was kept in place for the clearance. The next one. And then again, overhead and then ground level of the entrance now. So that's gone from, can you go back one? Gone from wide open up to sky to pretty densely covered. Okay, so that is our oak tree canopy today. And that is our entrance today. So part of the reason that we were so hair on fire about this is simply that ground level view was not taken into consideration by the site plan. When we saw the site plan, came before council, and frankly, a lot of council looked a little surprised by it as well when they realized that it had gone from having two entrances, the one up in the north corner and the one on Oak Branch, to a single entrance just on Oak Branch, and that they were going to take out 8 of those trees. That's when everybody went a little haywire on the thing. So that is, I'll go to the next one. So that is what you started to see up on the bulletin boards, and what I started to deliver to you were those segments of the site plan that showed exactly what we were talking, what was being presented. That, can you run back one? That on that right-hand side, as you enter Majestic Oaks, that you all know, all 8 of those trees on that right-hand side were going to be gone. And I was not sleeping because I thought they were going to be gone the next day because they had just approved that site plan. And I said, somebody, there's a work order somewhere. There's an invoice out there somewhere that someone's going to show up with a chainsaw and those trees are going to be gone. And that just doesn't seem right or fair to me, just in terms of we are invested in that. I'm not certain that there is another oak tree canopy like that in the city. So I think it's our responsibility to try and protect it, preserve it. Oak trees are good. So the first business site plan that you started to see was presented as final on August 4th. And that was when I saw it and started telling people. That seemed to be when council got a close look at that idea, that whole thought that they're going to remove all those trees. And that it was going to one entrance. And then I like this picture because it clearly shows that fire truck is banging into the median. So there's impact. There's danger. There is a tight turn there. And I don't recall who asked, but yes, once you make that right-hand turn onto Oak Branch, the only way out is through. Doesn't matter that there's a sign that this is 1,000-pound limit for vehicles going through that neighborhood. Once you commit, you're not getting out without going through the neighborhood one way or another. And my view is, an 18-wheeler's not going to be able to make that turn. There's just no way, in or out. So, and we don't know. I've talked about that. We said we have no idea what those businesses are going to be in there. It could be 20 of them. And, Ryan, you can tell me if I'm wrong about this. There could be one with all of that space. Okay. Yeah. Right. But if they wanted to have two warehouses in there that were taking deliveries from 18-wheelers, they could do that. Okay. That's what I was concerned about. And then just basically all of the postal addresses for First Business Park are on South Riverside. There's not a single address on Oak Branch. That's just not the postal address. So driving a main entranceway onto Oak Branch just seems wrong to me. A lot of this is all about how I feel. These are my feels. Okay. And then the US 1 frontage. And we did talk about a good bit of that. And that if you look overhead on Google Maps and look between the Winn-Dixie and the Publix, there are a dozen businesses along that frontage, and they all have a front entrance. Every last one of them. So that's the part that I can't figure out in my head. Kudos to you for trying to explain it to me, but I'm still not getting it. That why is this the only, the biggest, the newest, the best business park, this brand new idea about having that small, that light industry in a residential area, how is it that that can't have a front entrance? So that's my question. Covered all of this. So then from there, from the point at which the city council did go ahead and approve that site plan, again, in my view, without full knowledge of what the all of the impacts would be to us, because we were not notified, we were not aware, we were not involved in any of those earlier discussions about this, I felt that it was important to keep talking up about it. So that's what I've been doing. And he knows that, and he knows that. Here you go to the next one. So this is what we've been doing ever since. So starting on the next day, I've sent emails practically every day. So we've talked about those tree removals. We've talked about the size of the oak trees, which I understand they are not oversized. So apparently they can be removed without permit. And then the traffic study that we were talking about, this said that it's not a truck route. That would need to be changed. And then just what I talked about now about the overview between of that the areas between 442 and Roberts Road. I asked for some details just about some of the things that we've already talked about. What is the reasoning behind this FDOT decision to not allow a front entrance? Explain it to me. I still need to know. I did look back, and I pulled up all of the public records, all the videos. I listened through to of all of the planning and zoning, and made notes about all of everything that I saw there. And I keep begging, I keep wringing my hands and asking Ryan and city manager and the city in general, just to kind of take our side in this and say, do whatever we need to do to get to change FDOT's mind. Because this doesn't need to be a Majestic Oaks problem. It doesn't need to be a city problem. It's a problem between the developer and FDOT. If that project's too big for that, then that needs to be addressed. I'm hoping that we can get somewhere with this. I continued down, talked about the access gate, talked about the postcard notification, we talked about that, pulled up the development agreement. Oh my God, 500 pages of application on that initial development agreement. Lots and lots of discussion about just that access parcel. And then we made citizens' comments that a lot of you were involved in and saw. So I believe that's where we are. That's all we're asking. That's all I'm gonna continue to ask. Can we do everything in our power to try and preserve the Majestic Oaks entrance and canopy by having no trees out and no trucks in? I think that's gonna be the safest and best course for Majestic Oaks. I don't know what else I can come up with in terms of more reasons to do that. So I appreciate all of you being here. Certainly I can take questions if you have them, but I think we've covered all of our concerns, and then of course all of the city's concerns, and I get it. But in terms of the flooding, this, I appreciate development. I'm not anti-business, but there has to be a balance. There has to be some consideration. Is it worth it? You know, is it worth more to have some green space and some trees to try and mitigate flooding, or are we just going to keep clear cutting until it's just too late and we're all underwater? So, flooding concerns, definitely entrance concerns, and everybody has been very clear about their traffic concerns. That in and out of there is definitely going to pose a problem. So, what I'm taking away from this is, can, are we going to engage you? Can I get you to try again? To get them to change the speed limit so that that works? Because, yeah, if we could get a front entrance on there by getting it down to 45, that would, that solves everybody's problems.
I have no problem in hearing conversation.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. I'm sorry. When, are we over? Are we over?
No, no, no.
We got another question.
Okay. Before the council had changed this from B3 highway commercial to this business PUD that has restrictions on what kind of uses can be in there compared to B3 highway commercial, right? You've probably seen the new 7 new car washes that are going up in the city. Those are allowed by right in highway commercial. City staff. So one of the things, too, about this is that on a straight zoning, you know, in the potential that, you know, there could have been way more trips out of this site than what this has brought it down to. There's pros and cons to that, right? I think even if we could get DOT and staff, we'll keep trying. You know, one of the concerns for the future for your site is even if staff could get DOT to change their mind, you're then going to run the risk of never getting a traffic light.
Even with development across the street, which would be 2 or 3 times bigger than this one.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a possibility because you've started moving the access points. And again, I think this project has pretty much de minimis trips that was based on the TIS. A typical car wash that could have been there, 700-800 trips a day coming out of there. And so the use was really restrained in that. And it was done through parking control on site. So I just wanted to add.
Thank you.
It was like 700 trips, and now under the Live Local project with the four commercial out parcels, right in front of Edgewater Landings, probably in the next 2 years, 9,000 average daily trips coming out of 13 acres. No, they have the ability to make a. You mean out of the oak branch entrance? Oh, yeah, it's a left. I mean, it's not. There's no sign that says left hand only, but to get to US 1, you have to. Correct. Yeah. Yeah, we could. That'll show them.
With the cost. So another reason that we, like I said, hair on fire about this was we've been at this for over 20 years, and we have that much invested in the trees themselves, growing those trees, and maintaining those areas. We've got irrigation, we've got landscaping costs, we've got other concerns in there. If someone does come in there and plows down that Majestic Oak sign, who's going to take care of that for us? And we've got a light pole out there that, again, when Majestic Oaks was doing its initial development, the city was pretty clear in telling us that, yeah, that's not a street light. We can't help you with that. If you want a street light there, you're going to have to pay for it yourself. So we pay for all of the street lights. We pay for all of that lighting. We maintain. We do the landscaping. We do the the medians. So who do we go to if the first time an 18-wheeler comes in there and plows that down?
Hypotheticals are tough, but if in that scenario would be, you know, you'd call the police and they would do a police report, and then the tractor trailer would have insurance, and then ultimately the tractor trailer's insurance company would most likely replace the sign. So it's just like anything else. There's so many hypotheticals, it's impossible to tell. But
well, we did have that, and that was one of the reasons that we initially did that traffic complaint, was that we had a big, what's that called? A bucket truck that came through from Greenwood down Oak Branch and hooked up the electric wires on the way in. Took down electricity for the entire, all of Oak Branch on that north side for a day. So, you know, that's why we don't want big trucks back in there. And it's going to be difficult, and it's going to be, we feel dangerous. We don't think it's safe. So what can we do? What can we do now? What's our next step in terms of, I'm not going to keep bothering you, but how do we change FDOT's mind? It's not the answer I want to hear.
Yeah, because I don't
stuff's easily addressable though, like through company business and enforcement. So like the no right hand turn, I know that he has a stop sign. We can do education and we can dedicate some stuff to that to fix it. Just like other businesses, if they're parking on US 1, we can address that immediately. So that wouldn't be a long term issue that's just out of control. So we would take care of that hypothetically if it even.
Okay, I remember all my questions. because I took notes. First one. So the tree that's being removed. Cool, whatever. If we pay for the landscaping, they take out the tree. They decided it. So can they just say, oh, we're going to take away your sign too? Why? Yeah, why can't they do that if they're able to remove the tree that we pay for? Do they have to have a purpose if they're the ones doing it? Well, I just want to make sure, yeah. What's the... And what if they're like, oh, we want a sign showing this is where our business park is? I couldn't find the sign on the... No, we couldn't find it. Next question. Can you explain the difference between urban and rural? Rural, how they decide?
On the road?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's based on many things. So the width of the lanes, so in rural conditions,
So even with the addition of all the new business parks, it would still be considered rural?
Yeah, until FDOT, I don't know if it would ever change that classification.
Okay.
Because the entire right-of-way would have to be really redesigned to warrant that new classification.
Okay. And then a question for all of you, since you guys live in Majestic Oaks. Does that greenery that's there right now help with flooding because the water goes into the ground? Yeah. So you guys don't flood there at all, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, but not tremendously in the front. So as someone who lives in an awful neighborhood in Port Orange, it's really bad. We flood with like maybe 10 minutes of rain. So how is there a guarantee 100% with the map that they provided that that is going to help with flooding or not cause more flooding? Okay. Well, after that business.
Serious. I've probably spent at least 3-4 hours trying to get in touch with that DOT over the last 3-4 weeks. So.
And they owe me comments on about 12 different other projects. So. They are the only ones who can do it.
shared our contact for this project with Linda for FDOT?
Yeah, correct? I thought I did. Michael Sanders? Okay. I will send it to you again.
We'll share the contact information, and you guys are welcome to reach out to him with any questions.
Michael, yeah, him. Absolutely. I really appreciate you all coming. My business cards are on the back, so is Joe's. So if you do have any other questions, always feel free to call. I'm always open. I'm willing to show anything we have. Oh, Linda, let me get you, did you get the power, your USB? Okay. Thank you. Yes, it does. No, it's fine. This job eats a lot of pro, so if you can't. Yeah, development service is kind of the other, yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that.